This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Here's Ian, 208 and 20 seconds here on WWL. Really interesting conversation last hour with a reporter from Wired Magazine. You can go back and listen to that on the Odyssey app. You just rewind it like it's a DVR, a VCR, if you're a little more old school than that. Yeah, the Odyssey app lets you jump back in time. Anything you missed on any show on WWL, Tommy, Newell, this show, Sports Talk. If you don't have the Odyssey app already, go check it out. Download it. It's free. It's a good app. You search for WWL, and then you just save us in your favorite stations. So that's one way you could go back and listen to that interview. Or in just a little while here, Coleman's going to have it podcasted up on demand at our website, WWL.com. You just go up to the main menu there and hit audio, and then click Scoot Show, and you can listen to all 3 hours or just 1 hour or the whole show. Whatever you want. We make it very easy for you. I want to know about what your class song was. A couple people texted in earlier in the show. Let's see if I can scroll down here and pull these up. Got a lot of texts. Let's see. East Jefferson High School, class of 1970, same as Scoot. Class song was Let It Be by the Beatles. That's a good class song. Wouldn't you agree, Coleman?
I would have to hear it. I'm not familiar with the Beatles catalogs. I only know Let the popular songs.
All right. No, it's okay. It's okay. There's a lot of Beatles content out there. So somebody else from 1970, Grace King High School in Metairie, we got to get out of this place by the Animals. That was our unofficial class song because the principal would not let us use it. I think I remember some of us singing it anyway. Somebody says, my class song of 1983 was voted by the students to be New Orleans Ladies by Louisiana LaRue, but the administration of the Catholic school would not allow it. I'm seeing a trend emerging here. Here's a text that says, Yellow Brick Road by Elton John, 1974. St. Stanislaus Boarding School. My class didn't have a song. I guess that only happens at co-ed schools or all-girls schools. Somebody in 1985 said their class song was We Are the World. That's a good one. You know, We Are the World. Oh, he's on the phone now. That's okay. Stairway to Heaven, that's a kick-ass class song. So let me tell you about my class song. The year is 2002. And graduating high school. It's about 400 of us. And there was a sort of ballot program that went around where everybody in homeroom put down what they wanted our class song to be. And we're a tight-knit group, those 400 of us who were graduating in 2002. And we all kind of got together. And again, this is not quite pre-internet, but like pre-social media. So we're not connecting online in the same way that we are now, but we had like, you know, AOL and People Link and some of these, you know, chat message boards and stuff like that. And we said, wouldn't it all be funny if we all voted for our class song to be Big Pimpin' by Jay-Z? You know the one.
That one.
Big Pimpin', spending G's. We doing Big Pimpin' up in NYC. We doing Big Pimpin' up in BLAD.
That's the one. Look at that soul.
B-U-A-B.
I might have to issue one of those cards.
I can do part of the verse, but it's full of curse words that I can't do here. Anyway, so we all voted for Big Pimpin', and it won. It was a landslide. Everybody wanted Big Pimpin' to be our high school class song. But just like some of our texters are saying, the administrators didn't like that. I'm sorry, I thought this was America. This is supposed to be a democracy. Power to the people, man.
When you brought up the subject of a school song, I can honestly say I don't remember if I had a school song. Like, I didn't even know that was a part of the graduation tradition. I don't remember voting on anything. I don't remember hearing the song played when I was walking the state. Like, I don't remember anything about a graduation song. So either I didn't care that much, or I'm just deprived, or I wasn't paying attention. I'm not sure.
No, I think I don't know. Maybe your high school had one. Maybe not everybody's does. Some other texter said, hey, I guess it only happens at co-ed schools or all-girls schools. So I don't know if somebody has some intelligence on that, like, hey, I went to Jesuit or Brother Martin, and we also didn't have a class song. Let me know. But we all voted for Big Pimpin', and the principal said, no, we can't play Big Pimpin' at graduation after when everyone's throwing their caps up in the air. And so he kicked it back to the student council, which I think was just like 6 or 10 seniors and the senior class student council. And they came up with Here's to the Night by Eve Six, which sucks. It's not a good, Eve Six, love you guys. Inside Out, a true banger, a touchstone for the elder millennial set. We like that song. It's the Heart in a Blender song. But then, they had to keep, they had to keep making new music after the Heart in a Blender song. So they rolled out Here's to the Night off their 2000 album Horoscope, which, again, sucks. And that's what we had for our class song. So, that I think that was my first taste of maybe the real world's not a fair place. Life's not fair. A lot of things happened that year. We had September 11th happen when we were just getting started in our senior year. And we became disillusioned quickly between that and having our class song taken away from us, the election overturned, if you will. We got a taste of that early. I see we're stacking up some phone calls. I'm going to ask you guys to hang on and be patient with me, because first we got to do the news bomb. Coleman. Ow, jeez. Ow. Damn. Ah. At a rally in Pennsylvania yesterday, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance gave a fiery response to a reporter who asked him if the Trump campaign is still standing behind the self-proclaimed black Nazi and transgender porn enthusiast, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Here's what he said.
More interested in pursuing policies that correct the problems of Kamala Harris. A sex scandal in North Carolina is between the lieutenant governor and the people of North Carolina. They're going to make their decision, and we support them.
Okay. I mean, we endorsed him repeatedly and enthusiastically, but now we want to talk about something else. Obviously, J.D. Vance wanted to move the conversation away from the utterly clownish, toxic candidate that Trump endorsed in a pivotal swing state. Plus, I mean, to J.D. Vance's credit, he surely can't relate to the man's pornography viewing preferences, unless it's one of those casting couch videos. J.D. Vance was also asked if he could address debunked claims that he has mentioned about Ohio migrants eating people's pets.
What I have a responsibility to do in Springfield, Ohio, or any constituency in the state of Ohio, and if, God willing, the American people honor me by making me their next vice president, this will be my responsibility for the whole country. My responsibility is to listen to the people that I serve, and not a biased media. And that's what I'll keep on doing in Springfield, Ohio, or anywhere else.
Oh, he's going to listen to the people he serves. Okay. He's going to listen to his constituents. Great. Here's the thing. J.D. Vance did not listen to his constituents in this case. Or at least, he did not listen to the constituents who were telling him something he didn't want to hear. Because his campaign staff called the city manager in Springfield, Ohio. His name is Brian Heck. The J.D. Vance campaign called the Springfield city manager on September 9th and asked him, is it true that Haitian migrants are eating people's pets in your town? And the city manager recalling this conversation, says he asked point blank, are the rumors true of pets being taken and eaten? And I told him no. There was no verifiable evidence or reports to show that this rumor was true. I told them that these claims were baseless. J.D. Vance knew this was a lie. He knew that there was no evidence, no verifiable reporting to show that this was true. He proactively asked the city manager that question, and he got a no for an answer, and he kept telling that lie anyway. The next night, the September 10th ABC debate, Donald Trump repeats that lie to tens of millions of people. And in the following weeks, Springfield, Ohio, descends into chaos as bomb threats shutter schools, hospitals, and government buildings. That's some crack work there, JD. Listening to constituents. Give me a break. Following up Vance's act, Donald Trump took the stage and made this head-scratching remark.
We got to get out and vote. You can start right away. You know that, right? Now we have this stupid stuff where you can vote 45 days early. And we need each and every one of you to go out. Just don't take anything for granted. We have to win Pennsylvania. Go out and make a plan to vote early, vote absentee, or vote in person on election day. But you got to get out and vote.
How are you going to say that early voting is a stupid thing and then 5 seconds later say you got to go vote early? What? I guess message discipline has never been his thing. But look, early voting isn't stupid. Early voting is awesome. More people should take advantage of it. It's secure. It's safe. It strengthens our democracy. The more people we have voting, the better. If you don't agree with that sentiment, it's because you got a dog in the race and you're afraid if too many people vote, your candidate's not going to win, which is fine. You can do that. It's a free country. But look, Donald Trump thinks that early voting is stupid because Republican voters, broadly speaking, don't do it. And they don't do it because he tells them it's stupid. To the extent that early voting caused any confusion or consternation in Pennsylvania in 2020, you can blame the Republican state legislature for that because they passed a law that says nobody can start counting the early votes until election day. Hundreds of thousands, millions of people vote early in Pennsylvania, but none of those votes can be counted until the polls close on election day. That is not typical policy for early voting. Pennsylvania did that on purpose in 2020. Early votes are usually overwhelmingly Democratic. This year, 2024, 51% of voters say that they're going to vote early. And those voters that say they're voting early are expected to go to Kamala Harris over Donald Trump 61% to 35%. So the margin is closing, but early voters are still largely Democratic. So when the Republican legislature in Pennsylvania said, we're not going to count those overwhelmingly Democratic votes until after we get all the Republican votes in, it's going to look like Trump is running away with the election. Everybody's going to go to bed on election night thinking Trump's got this on a lock. Until a day or so after, when voting ends, then all these Democratic early votes come in a blue wave. They knew that some of their voters, some susceptible, gullible, mentally underclocking voters, would see that as evidence of vote tampering on the part of Democrats. They are misleading the people of Pennsylvania on this issue in order to give themselves cover so that if Trump loses, they can say it was because it was stolen from him. You see how this works? Don't say I didn't warn you. Hey, for what it's worth, I would love to bring you some Kamala Harris audio, but she didn't have any campaign events last night and she doesn't have any today either. So we'll catch up on her tomorrow. There's a new poll out that probably won't surprise anyone that shows Kamala Harris is more popular than Trump among Asian American and Pacific Islander voters.
Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris is viewed more favorably by Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander voters than Republican rival Donald Trump, according to a new poll from AAPI Data and APIA Vote, Harris is both Black and South Asian American and has worked to rally AAPI voters in swing states like Georgia, where their numbers are growing. The new survey finds around 6 in 10 AAPI voters have a very or somewhat favorable opinion of Harris, while about one-third have a somewhat or very unfavorable view. In comparison, 3 in 10 AAPI voters have a positive view of Trump, and around two-thirds view him negatively. I'm Julie Walker.
Clunk. I can't imagine that has anything to do with Trump shooting himself in the foot when it comes to people's racial identity. He has no idea how to talk about that in a way that doesn't make him sound like a fool. Hey, don't take my word for it. After Trump said that Harris happened to turn black, a lot of his fellow Republicans in Congress told Axios that was awful. Maybe they don't know how to handle the campaign, so you default to issues that just simply should not be an issue. That was not a demonstration on how to win over undecided voters. That's Republicans saying that. Meanwhile, on his way out the door, President Joseph Robinette Biden has made a plea for the United States to stay engaged with the world in his final appearance before the UN General Assembly.
President Biden is urging the U.S. to reject isolationism in his final appearance before the United Nations General Assembly as he caps a nearly half-century career.
I've seen a remarkable sweep of history.
And the president says it's taught him today's troubles will pass if America and the world work together.
We are stronger than we think. We're stronger together than alone.
In a wide-ranging address, the president said there's still room for diplomacy to end Mideast violence.
In fact, it remains the only path.
And urged other nations to keep backing Ukraine in the Russia war.
We cannot grow weary.
It was one of his last high-profile chances to rally support for Kyiv, which could be in doubt if Donald Trump wins in November. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
It's not just a rejection of isolationism that Joe Biden pleaded for in front of alliance members. He reportedly also asked international leaders for some Ben and Jerry's and a travel pillow. If you want to react to anything you just heard, the way to do it is 504-260-1870. That is the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line. Thank you for your patience. Those of you who are already on hold, I'll get to you as soon as we come back from the break. Shoot me a text message. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. I got no more guests until 325. It's just you and me and the wallpaper, man. Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Yeah, stick around. Jam! Let's jump right into it. We'll go to the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line, 504-260-1870, where we find Tom in Houma. Tom, you're on the air. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, fantastic. Ian, I got an idea
okay.
to help out with some of this Russian disinformation.
Okay. What is it?
All right. I say we make WWL the arbiter of truth and false
okay.
online. Bear with me now. I know this sounds extreme.
I'm with you.
I say that we elect you to be the arbiter of this. And the way how we're going to have to ask you to do this is you open up Twitter or you open up one of your apps. Anytime you see something that you don't like, you tell this person, report to the WWL radio station, you're getting a spanking. You're going to spank them. Now, when you see something that you like, you tell them to come on down to the station, and you say, you did a good job, and then you give them kisses. This way, you're using positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement, and you can finally get everybody to say everything that you want them to say. And I mean, Who better than you to do that? You're on the radio.
Well, do I have to spank them? I don't want to spank strangers, really. Maybe well, there's another thing. I could wag my finger at them or something.
That suits you better. I mean, but I think that spanking them would probably be more of a deterrent, don't you?
I don't know, man. Tom, I have conversations with people all the time where I say, hey, I know that you probably don't think that you're doing this, and you're not going to believe me when I tell you that you're doing this, but you are repeating Russian propaganda. And I don't know if you're doing that because you have been fed it by the Russians, but the things that you are saying is exactly what Russian propagandists want Americans to say. So in that moment...
slow down.
Okay, sorry.
Russians want Americans to go down to the radio station for you to give them kisses and spanks. And by the way...
What? No.
I just wanted you to know, for the record, you actually objected to the spankings, but you didn't say anything about the kisses. So I'm going to assume you're good with that.
Well, I wanted to start with the spanking, but I'm going to brought it out. I don't really want to be spanking or kissing anyone.
I don't want kisses.
Can I... look, Tom,
you
need to have to think about this.
You want to see in the world.
That's a good message, Tom. I appreciate it. I don't think that I am like the arbiter of truth. You know, I'm going to get things wrong just as like as anybody else is.
Who is?
We have to do that as a collective, Tom. The way that we do that is to trust each other. I have a fast answer for you here, Tom. The way that we decide what's true and what's false is we look at who is saying it. And if the people that are telling us things...
That's an awful idea. Can you tell you how I do it? I say, if it comes out of Ian Hoke's mouth on WWL, it's all true.
Well, that's good for me, but I don't... That's not my mission. That's not part of what I'm trying to... I'm not trying to say, like, it's true because I said it.
Now Ian Hoke is spreading Russian disinformation.
I am, Tom. I reject that.
I'm not sure. You're going to have to be the arbiter of it.
Do I have to go in the back and spank myself now?
I don't think that's PC.
It's up to you, really.
Whose office am I supposed to do that in? Mine?
That you shouldn't. Well, I mean, if you say you shouldn't, I would argue it's Russian disinformation. And, you know, appropriate action needs to be taken.
Look, I'm going to take it up with the corner office, Tom. We'll figure out what the best way is to do it. Thank you for calling in. And let me just say this. The way that we determine what's true and false in this society is you score people on their credibility. We talked a little bit about this yesterday with Dan Frumkin. If you have somebody who you believe is acting in good faith, who has a demonstrable track record of truth-telling and earning your trust, that person, I think, holds a better chance of telling you the truth in the present moment as opposed to somebody else where there's no evidence that they're operating in good faith and you look behind them and there's a comet tail of lies and deception and misinformation and noise. Anybody is capable of telling a lie. Anybody is capable of telling a truth. But if you're asking me, how do we as a society decide who's worth trusting? You have to kind of zoom out and say, what has this person been right or wrong about before? For example, if you have somebody that says, you know, eating Fruit Loops for 3 meals a day is good for your teeth. Okay, that sounds like a lie. That doesn't quite pass the smell test. And then you say, well, who's telling us that? Let's look at what this person's track record is. Oh, this person has been telling us for 50 years that eating sugar cereals are good for your teeth. And we know that that's wrong because there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. And the people who are experts in the field, your dentist, your orthodontists, etc., they have evidence that says sugar cereals are bad for your teeth. So why are you going to listen to that person? I don't think you should. I hope that that made some sense. It was kind of a convoluted metaphor, but I'm doing my best here.
Ian, I'm not comfortable with the idea of you spanking anything.
I'm not spanking anybody. Okay. Don't. Well, No, I'm not spanking anybody.
Why'd you hesitate just now?
Well, because I don't want to speak overly broadly. You don't know my life. This got too personal. On the Oak River Jewelers talking text line, here's a text that says, when facts don't fit your narrative, you just say, I'm sure they are lying. No, I don't. I don't know what you're talking about. Are you talking about me? Are you saying when facts don't fit my narrative, you just say, I'm sure they are lying? I absolutely do not do that. Scoot does not do that. If there are facts that don't fit my narrative, that either means I need to change my narrative or I need to more closely examine what the facts are that are apparently in contradiction of my narrative. My initial impulse is not to assume that everything that challenges my beliefs is a lie. There are a lot of people in this audience who immediately hear something that they've never heard before that doesn't make sense to them at first blush, and they call it a lie. And that's no way to go through life, brothers and sisters. That will exhaust you. Here's a text that says, please tell Ian to tell that last caller he needs to stop, get out of the house more. He just does not realize they got people out here that pay money to be spanked. If Ian does what he says, Ian won't have to be on the radio. He'll be spending all his time spanking people. I can't believe we're still talking about it. I don't want to be spanking people.
See how quickly the show can derail just from one phone call? You spend all these hours choosing songs,
look
picking up
all
topics,
this
all those
preparation
papers,
I did.
And some guy just says spanking on the air and everything goes to crap.
Here's a text that says, nowadays you have to say no Diddy after saying something questionable, LOL. Oh, like if you say something that's kind of off color or you say no Diddy.
Right, it used to be no homo, but they changed it to no Diddy.
Yeah, we're not saying no homo anymore.
You know, I did a fun thing this weekend. So now there's this thing on X on social media where everyone's like posting Diddy next to the person that they hate the most. So it's like they show pictures of like Diddy with Oprah, Diddy with Harvey Weinstein, or Diddy with Kamala Harris, or Diddy with Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And then like on other social media networks, they show pictures of Diddy with like Donald Trump. So I've been doing like both at the same time. I've been going to like liberal leaning accounts and posting pictures with Diddy with liberal people.
Yeah.
And then going to like conservative accounts and posting pictures with Diddy with Donald Trump and other conservatives. It's just a fun game to see how everybody's like defending their guy, but at the same time bashing the opposite. It's like y'all both are doing the exact same thing, and it was pretty entertaining.
That is high use of your time in social media, Coleman. I like that. You know, it is just, and this is another sort of side part. You see all these clips and videos of Diddy talking to people and hanging out with people, and they're like Kim Kardashian and Jennifer Lopez and like Aaliyah. And they're talking about how I went to Diddy's party last night, and they kind of like roll their eyes and then change the subject. And it really makes you think, like, God, the breadcrumbs were there all along.
Yeah, but we didn't have social media like we did back then. Like when he was with Jennifer Lopez, like the late 90s, it wasn't, like you said, we had dial up. So the information didn't move as fast.
It didn't move quite. Yeah, you had to wait for the picture to load from the top down, you know, slowly, like one line at a time. Here's a text that says, Ian, spank you very much. Another texter says, I'm uncomfortable now. Well, join the line, bud. Everybody's uncomfortable here. I got to scroll down pretty far to find a text that isn't about spanking. Let's see here. Here's a text that says, what do you mean stupid? And this texter is talking about Donald Trump saying that early voting is stupid right before he told everybody to go early vote. What do you mean stupid? Stupid was the plan of the Democrats to start early voting. That's why it's favored by the Democrats. How long did we vote on election day with exceptions made only for people that had a demonstrable need? It's just a stupid plan by the Democrats to enable them to screw up the vote of the real people. Bobby, a MAGA Republican. Well, hey, listen, thanks for listening to the show, Bobby. I appreciate your comment here. Democrats have the bulk of the early vote because Democrats live in places where there's lots of people and voting takes a very long time. And if you're in a small town or somewhere out in the suburbs or exurbs and you can just waltz right into your polling station and then waltz right back out on election day, that is a blessing. And I hope that you appreciate that. Because people that live in more dense communities and more big cities sometimes get stuck in line literally all day long. And if you've never had to do that, you know, put yourself in somebody else's shoes and say, I can't wait to get up and go vote for my preferred candidate. I know how I'm voting for president and all the down ballot races. I studied my constitutional amendments. I know the issues. I know the people. I'm exercising my God-given right as an American to choose my leadership and help steer the direction of my community and my country. And you show up and there's 800 people in line in front of you. And some of those people have already been there for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. That doesn't feel fair, does it? Because if you don't have time, either because you got to go back to work or you got to go pick up your kid from school or you got to stop by the pharmacy, that is an undue burden on your right to vote. So that's why we have early voting for people who cannot afford to take 6, 8, 10 hours out of their day, their busy lives, to go stand in line. That's why we have early voting. And that happens more often to people in big cities who more often than not vote democratically. So that's why I think, Bobby, there's this perception on your part that this is a thing designed by Democrats to benefit Democrats. That's not that far off the mark, but the reasoning that you're applying here is a little bit different. Here's a text that says, Ian, what are your sources since everyone else's sources are not valid? Hey, man, don't hand that to me. I'm not saying everyone else's sources are not valid. That is way too broad of a stroke. If people want to tell me what their sources are, then I can offer what I think is an honest assessment about whether or not that's a good source or not. You know, people ask here on all the time, like, okay, well, you know, if you don't think X, Y, or Z is a good source for news, where do you go for your news? And I always say WWL.com, obviously, Associated Press, Reuters, BBC, a couple others. That's a great place to start. If you're just looking for just the facts, that's great. If you're looking for political opinion, there's lots and lots of other places you can get that. And a lot of those opinion columns and editorial pieces will hopefully be rooted in fact, but you have to be able to understand the difference between, you know, what's like firsthand reporting that somebody else bases an opinion on and what's an opinion that someone just plucked out of thin air because that's what they want to believe. What are my sources? Too many to count, honestly. I mean, the first couple websites I read every day are WWL.com, NOLA.com, Washington Post, Politico, Fox News, a couple others. I go to FARC. FARC is a news aggregator that pulls in stories from all sorts of different places, left, right, and center. I trust the networks. I trust CBS and ABC and NBC generally. I understand that there is a possibility that there could be a bias there. But usually I'm not going to those websites for political opinion. I'm going to those places to see, oh, somebody got shot, or there was an accident here, or this piece of legislation got passed, you know, that sort of stuff. All right, I'm a little bit late here. I'll read more of your text messages when I get back, but we'll step away. If you want to talk about anything besides spanking, good God, we can do that. And coming up at 3:25, I'm going to talk to Dan Fox. He's the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. Do you still read print newspapers and magazines? I do, but just one. Literally just one, Anti-Gravity Magazine. It's a good little magazine. So what role do print publications like Anti-Gravity, the sort of alt-weekly or alt-monthlies, what role do they have to play in the media landscape, and how can they serve content and address issues at the local level? We'll talk to Dan Fox about that at 3:25. Till then, it's just you and me, Ian Hoken for Scoot. Stick around. All right. We got about 12 minutes here before we hand it back over to the news. Here's a text message that says, hey, man, what's your opinion on mail-in voting? I believe you need an ID and should vote in person. If you cannot get an ID or don't have one, you shouldn't be complaining about your right to vote. No problem. Look, I also think you should have an ID to vote. We've all heard the arguments why you know, if you need an ID to get a library card or, you know, buy a bottle of wine at the supermarket, why shouldn't you have to have a photo ID to vote? The only issue that I have with that is that there are certain political actors who are eager to implement that policy without really doing enough work to outreach to communities, to people who might not have photo IDs but are still voting. So I'm generally in favor of photo ID, but I would love for it to be implemented in a way that does not specifically hurt a certain group of voters who vote a certain way, because that's what a lot of this has been. Don't think for a second that there hasn't been a decades-long effort by some Republicans to reduce Democratic turnout by demanding photo ID. Just for me, that seems pretty unfair. It's difficult for me to separate those two things, but if you ask me point blank, I say, yes, I think you should have photo ID to vote. My opinion on mail-in voting is that it's safe, it's secure, it works for a lot of people that need mail-in voting. You know, for example, you know, if you're overseas serving in the military, you're going to vote by mail. And the system that guarantees the security and efficacy of that system is the same one that applies for people who are in the United States and who aren't in the military, but maybe are disabled or bedridden or whatever. For whatever reason, they cannot vote early and they cannot get to the poll on election day. It doesn't even have to be that specific. Colorado has only mail-in voting. 100% mail-in voting in Colorado. And you know what? The number of people participating in those elections went up. And there's no increasing amount of fraud or ballot harvesting or any of the other kind of like scary things that people talk about in the mail-in voting conversations. It is safe. It is secure. And the people that are telling you it's not really have an agenda. They really want you to believe that for their own special political purposes. I don't necessarily trust that. Here's a text that says, one reason the early voting was started was to stop Jim Crow laws and racial restrictions that were passed to prevent black voters from casting their votes. The polls would be closed at certain times in the evenings when hundreds of people would still be in line. Yeah, that tracks. A couple other people text me about where they get their news from. Somebody says, hey, Ian, what about Good Levity? Start reading neutralgroundnews.com. I know about neutralgroundnews.com. That's been around for a minute, hadn't it? Let me see if I can click this link and see what it takes me to. Yeah, Neutral Ground News. It's like The Onion, but it's New Orleans stuff. That's good. Go check out Neutral Ground News. That's good for a laugh. Some people are saying, I still get the paper delivered to my house and I love it. Man, I haven't got the paper delivered to my house since I was, it was like, I think after Katrina, I turned off the paper delivery. It's just too unpredictable. Here's a text that says, come on, Ian, you should also read Gambit. If you don't, they said I should be spanked if I don't read Gambit. I really thought we'd get through the rest of the show without talking about spanking, but you never know what you know. Yeah, Gambit's great. I read the Gambit online. I'll flip through the print edition if I find it at a bar or a coffee shop or something. The reason we're talking about this is in a few minutes we're going to talk to Dan Fox, who's the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine, which is not print only. I mean, they have a website. You can go read a lot of their content on there. But I don't know. It's like, I like the comics. I like the photography. And for me personally, it's easier to enjoy those things in print than it is sitting in front of a computer, which I'm doing, 10 hours a day anyway. All right, we'll step away again. We'll come back and see if we can tuck in one or two more phone calls before we do the news. If you want to get in touch with anything we've spoken about today, that could be Russian disinformation, could be the election coming up. We'll talk about anything. I don't have a guest until 3:20, 3:25, so it's just you and me. I'll be back right after this. Stick around. Here's a text message that says, how do you know who's actually sending in the ballots? Voting by mail can be manipulated. Anyone that says that can't be is an idiot. What do you do, texter? What's your profession? Do you know anything about election security at all other than what you hear on the TV? Have you spoken to any people who actually run elections or design the systems that we use to vote? Do you really think that they would institute a mail-in voting system without any idea who's actually sending in the ballots? Do you have any idea how this works? I'm going to guess that you do not. But here you are, claiming that voting by mail can be manipulated, and anyone who says it can't be is an idiot. I would love to sit you down at a table with an elections administrator from a place that has universal mail-in voting and have you get a little bit of an education from them. Come on. You got to wake up pretty early in the morning to get one past me. We'll get caught up with Chris Miller, who's got our local headlines, and then we will hear from Joe Cardosi with your first traffic update of the afternoon, and then we'll come back. It's just you and me for a couple of minutes before we get back to my interview with Dan Fox, the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. We'll talk about the 20th anniversary of his print publication, the service that it provides, the content that they publish, and much more. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Thursday, and I'll be back right after this. Stick around.